What's going on, guys? Welcome to River City 93. This is your co-host, Elliot Barr.
Shaneer Duran.
And, okay. First and foremost, we want to send out our respects to the South Georgia Tormenta player, Lucas Coutinho. I believe it is.
Yeah.
I believe he kind of had a head injury. I didn't even watch the replay. I just saw, like, it had to be really bad where you had, like, every team in League One, like, sending respects. So, yeah. First and foremost, before we started the podcast, best of luck to him.
Yeah, prayers goes out to him, definitely.
Because having a concussion and having blacked out from a concussion, it is not a fun thing.
No.
It's not fun. But let's go on and get to the nitty gritty. Richmond Kickers, 2. Toronto FC, 2. That's a lot of 2s.
Yeah.
Why you sound so depressed?
I'm not really depressed, just a little frustrated.
Okay. Put out your frustrations.
First,
let me be your punching
bag. Well, first of all, it always hurts when you throw away a 2-0 lead.
True.
Especially when we get that 2-0 lead so early in the game and we looked so dangerous and so devastating to Toronto FC, too.
Yeah, we did.
But I think because of the way it feels more like 2 points lost than 1 point gained, if you know what I mean.
I agree with that sentiment. I guess where I'm like, because I'm not going to lie, like even at halftime, I was like, yo, this game is not done. I mean, we know that. But even still, like it felt like a very, very weird game because, yeah, Dejack scored 2 goals. We gave up 2 goals off set pieces. You had us not giving possession, but Toronto, who's known for having possession, being this long ball team.
Yeah.
You had...
Well, they switched to long ball after we went 2-0 up. They hit the panic button.
And then you had Richmond Kickers' defense being stout and not allowing anything to be brought in the middle, but then we get beat on 2 set pieces, like I said earlier.
Yeah, the and game it's was like... It was a bit weird.
Yeah, it's like it's 2 points dropped, but it's 10 points out of 4.
Yeah, 10 points so in 4 games. So it's that's the reason why I'm torn. I'm not
it's like
completely
you can,
upset.
It's like you can be mad. It's like you can totally be mad. It's like, oh, it's like two. It's like
only
an
if.
Yeah.
You know.
It's like an NFL game. When like an NFL game is in the draw, you're like, what am I supposed to do with this?
Exactly.
Like, it's like that weird mix of emotions because it's like, all right, we haven't lost, but it's like.
We didn't win either.
Does this now close us out our playoff window? Because, like, I'm not gonna, like, I keep harping on the point. I'm not gonna get overexcited until we hit that 15 point threshold.
Well, we're 4 points away from it.
Yeah. 5, 10, remember. You gotta win 5 more points.
Yeah.
But it's like.
That's 2 wins. Yeah. Or a win and 2 draws.
And 2 games on the road against Florida and South Georgia, 2 teams that are ahead of us in the table.
Yes, but last time we played Florida, we beat them.
You know? So it's like. I know a lot of fans are mad, but I don't think it's the mad that we saw in June, where it was like, we can't do nothing right, nothing's going wrong. No. I think it's more of that mad of, like, there was an opportunity. Like, if we win this game, it puts us in a totally different atmosphere of...
I think what issue this brings to a lot of people is they're mad, but at whom? Because if, for example,
I think they're
we let in 2 goals off of defensive mistakes, yeah, or one player lost the ball in the midfield and messed up, then you could be like, oh, well, either he needs to work harder in practice or don't play him next game.
Yeah.
And we can just dust it off and move on. But this is a situation where this is a tactical... I wouldn't even say it's an error because almost any coach would do the same thing. When you're 2-0 or 2-1 up and you're dominating the game, you have Toronto FC 2 on their back heel, and 2 of your most dynamic attacking players took nicks in the game, you're going to take them off. You're going to be like, all right, let's put in some defensive players and shore it up, take those guys off, make sure that they're ready for the next game. So the two players I'm talking about are Matt Bulldog and Joe Gallardo.
Hey, well, Joey Max, G,
the moment Joey G and Bulldog were taken off, it basically gave Toronto FC free license to push forward because they were scared to push forward. Pushing forward would take away their strategy of damage control.
I will say this. There were moments in the game where Toronto, granted, they had the bulk of possession. We're not going to deny that. Like, yeah. They had the bulk of possession. But I think it was like part of Bulo's game plan was like, look, I'm not going to give you the middle. I'll give you the wings because he knows, like, if you're going to cross it in, I have Akwe, I have Shinosky, I have Ivan, I have Troyer. I know they can get there. I know they can clear.
Exactly.
And even if they don't clear, like, back to like the halfway line, they're clearing it out of bounds.
Yeah.
But I think,
and even if they don't clear it out of bounds, granted,
we're gonna talk about the goals. There's some good goals, but
yeah.
Like, I think my only gripe with this game is the fact of, like, I feel like if you gave Bulo a second shot at this game, I think he changes his substitutions at certain moments. That's the only thing I think he changes, just because of the fact of, like, when you took off Gallardo, you took off
Bulldog,
you took off Maxi. It's like, those are your three creative players you brought on. Now, granted, you bring on defensive players because you want to see at the end of the game.
But then you're inviting the pressure.
Yeah, you're inviting the pressure.
You're inviting the pressure because now they don't have
Thompson and Boateng. I think if Bula goes back and look at the game, I think what he does is he might bring in Greg. Who else was on the bench for that game?
Yeah, I would say Greg, Ekinrode, and either Chin or Mwape, because you still need to have an attacking threat. You still need to have someone who's going to make Toronto think we can't push forward too much.
So you had Greg, you had Chin, you had Mwape on the bench now. Like I said, it's just a very weird game.
It is a weird game, but
like, it's like you got beat on two crazy three pointers. That's what happened.
Yeah, basically. Exactly.
It's like this team just pulled up from half court and was like, Kobe. It just went in. That's what happened. Like, and then you're just sitting there, you're like,
yeah, it's frustrating.
Alright, so these are the substitutes. You had Maxi sent off in the You had Maxi subbed off in the 64th minute. You had Bulldog subbed off in the 86th. And you had Gariano subbed off in the 74th.
Yeah.
So, I think that's what happened. But, I mean, like we said before.
Yeah,
like,
as these players are getting taken off, Toronto's like, okay, that's one less creative player we have to worry about when defending. Oh, there goes another one. Oh, three? All right, let's push forward. Guns blazing, all or nothing.
Yeah.
And that's when they get the second goal and... But then it's too late.
It's too little, too late. I mean,
too little, too late. And not only is it too little, too late, but you just put on two very defensive players and an inexperienced attacking player.
Charles Boateng. I think what happened was, because we were sitting up top, for those who didn't see the picture, we took a picture with Tolosok, who was up there watching the game with them. They blame us for the second goal. I don't blame myself. I blame more of Shanier because I was already there. Shanier came down and then we scored.
I was there for a while.
I'm using you as a sacrificial lamb.
Oh, okay.
You'll be fine. but, like, we pointed it out. It looked to be like a weird 3-4-1-2. Where Gallardo and Chen were the two strikers, and Bulldog was the attacking man behind
him. Yeah, I'm sitting in behind, yeah.
And I think Bulo stayed with that system because he bought on Boateng. What I think, and I'm not a coach, so this is what I would have... I'm trying to, like, get in Bulo's head. I think Bulo was still like, all right, we keep the two strikers up top to keep pressure on the center backs. But, like I said, I think if Bulo has a different shot, I think instead of bringing on Boateng...
He's bringing on Chen.
Maybe Mwape or Greg, just to kind of someone just to be like that second attacking mid.
I think I'd bring in Greg for either Matt Bulldog or Maxi because he does hustle defensively.
Yeah.
And you need someone who does.
Or I'll say this. You bring on Mwape, and Mwape can mimic the role of Gallardo, where he can be creative enough to get the ball in the middle but still put it out to the wings, and he can create on his own. You know Mwape can at least create.
Yeah.
So it's not like...
He's dangerous.
Yeah, it's not like you just have, like, I'll use the basketball analogy. It's not like you run it out there with a starting lineup of, like, three power forwards and two shooting guards. It's not like we're just like, all right, we're just here to soak up pressure. It's like, all right, we're still, and granted, we still created chances because Lockerbie, if Lockerbie gets that chance, and what is it, 3-1, a different game?
And you know, we've talked about Lockerbie and how he probably could be the fastest player in League One. I think that we had so many chances that could have gone better if he was a little slower. Because they...
So wait.
Yes! I know it sounds crazy, I think there were three times in the entire first half where he came bombing down that right flank and crossed the ball in, and DJ and Gallardo didn't get there yet. Like, he was way too fast and crossed the ball in. And it's not like he could hold it up because he's got pressure
on
him.
You do realize you're telling Flash to slow down, right?
Basically.
You're telling Flash, like, hey, look, I don't need you to go 100%. Let's slow this tempo up. Yeah. But all right.
So I mean, it's a good problem to have of sorts.
Oh, yeah.
Because eventually you can, you know, you can anticipate his run and then you get a head start. So then you get there at the same time because he overtakes you.
Most definitely. So let's go and talk about these goals. First of all, D-Jack, three goals in two games?
Three goals in two games.
Yeah, my man's is...
Congrats, man. The floodgates have opened.
Oh, yeah.
The drought is over.
You know the crazy thing is? He is technically, he would be our leading scorer last year. Yeah. That's a funny thing. That shows you how bad we were last year.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, it kind of came off of a deflection, but hey... Was it
Gallardo who went in to block a clearance, and the ball just popped way up in the air.
Yeah, the ball by the goal. Went way up in the air, and I'm not gonna lie, like being a goalkeeper, that is a goalkeeper's worst fear.
Yeah,
when the ball's up in the air, you're like, all right, where do I need to go? Because it's like in your head. For most goalkeepers, no, like I was taught to place markers on the field. So like before the game, I would walk onto the field, and like, all right, I know where I'm at the first half.
Yeah,
I will mark. Like, where the 6-yard box is, I will put, like, a mark every 10 steps. So I know, like, I put my feet, I know where I'm at in the field.
Yeah.
So it's like you're looking for those markers, but then you also got to remember, like, all right, there's, like, so much going on around
me. Yeah, there are two players over here. One of them's
someone's over here. Someone's there. Like, where do I need to go? You try to keep an eye on the ball. And it's kind of like the same thing again. Like, the goalkeeper kind of, I don't even know he gets a touch to it, but he kind of, like, mishandles it. Because you see most goalkeepers, they'll jump up, cradle it, and fall to the ground. And then literally he got caught between, do I jump? If I jump, the ball comes out. Or do I punch it? He got stuck in two lines.
No, he didn't know what to do with that. And I think if I don't remember who was hanging around over there and kind of tussling with a defender.
I can't remember. But I know Hughes made, like, the most brilliant play. Because any other player would have took a shot on goal.
Yeah, Hughes just held up.
And play. I'm not going to lie. Like, this, and... So this is the thing. I honestly think Hughes will tell you, oh, it was an assist. I think Hughes took a shot on goal, and I think he just missed it, that it fell into Jackson's path. And credit to Jackson, he put it in goal.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to say, that is our earliest goal this year, I believe.
Yeah,
I
don't fourth think minute.
Yeah, I don't think we scored an earlier goal this year.
No, fifth minute, technically.
But it's a goal in front of the Red Army, which is something we've been wanting for a long time.
Yeah. We got two goals in front of the Red Army today.
So, real quick, trivia question. Do you know the last person who scored a goal in front of the Red Army? Just bypassed the whole month of June. It didn't exist, so you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
So,
back to May.
You want a hit?
DJ, wasn't it?
Yeah.
DJ was the last person to score.
2-2 game against Lansing.
On section O side of the field.
Yeah, when he scored, when he pulled it from 30. He pulled a Steph Curry.
Yeah. Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that. So it was Hughes, actually, who challenges for the ball. So I don't think Hughes is the one who passed the ball in.
Did DJ? He did, because he has the assist. He has the assist.
No, because Hughes is the one who's...
It's Hughes.
Hughes is the one who is... putting all the pressure. No, it was Bulldog.
That's right, Bulldog.
It was Bulldog. So Hughes is putting pressure
on the
defender.
Replace the name Bulldog with Hughes, in my words.
Yeah, because the thing is, I feel that this goalkeeper is going up and bringing this ball down, like in practice. If Hughes isn't right there along with one of Toronto's defenders, I think it was Romeo who was over there by the post trying to hold Hughes off. Hughes is trying to go in to challenge for the ball. It's kind of, the keeper gets a bit skittish.
Yeah.
Patterson gets a bit skittish and does something.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Matt Bulldog is on it.
Yeah.
He gets there, you can see he was going to shoot. He sees the defender in front of him. He takes that touch to create a little more space. And then the shot slash.
The flash. I mean, it worked.
The shot slash pass.
And in the 23rd minute, Dijak again. Now, Dijak got the luckiest of touches. He got the luckiest of touches on that second goal. I don't care what no one said. He got lucky.
I think it's a mixture of the two. Like, I think it's a mixture of the two. Because I think the defender just comes in out of control and wild, trying to get a tackle on that ball.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that was a good idea. It was actually Gallardo who puts pressure and wins the ball back and puts that ball in for DJ.
It's something we haven't seen in a while, was that kind of like that high press, but it's zone. It's like a zonal press.
Yeah, zonal press.
We haven't seen it in a while from the kicker, so it's interesting to see that Buehler kind of pull that out of his bag.
Yeah.
And just be like, all right, look. So this is a zonal press kind of reminds me of the same thing of like NFL when it comes to like a cover three or a cover two,
mm-hmm.
whereas like in certain areas of the field is your zone. You cover that zone.
You put hold, anything that comes in that zone,
yeah,
you press.
You hold it. Once you get out of that zone, you fall back into position, and you become this now the second defender. You trail along just to help out, but mm-hmm. you don't initiate the press.
Exactly.
So Gario initiate the press, and then has the presence of mind to turn, go upfield. He passes to Dijak. Dijak gets the luckiest of touches.
He's lucky the defender came in wild.
So you're going to tell me Dijak made that touch? You gonna tell me what a straight face?
I'm telling you that he's ready to receive the ball.
Trash.
He's ready to receive that ball. If you look at it, he's ready to receive that ball. The defender just mistimed his.
Oh no, he did.
He came in completely out of control.
He slid. He did a third base slide. Figured out. I defended. He defended. But I mean, like, let's go back like a month ago. Dijak misses this opportunity.
A month ago. That defender gets a good touch.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just that kind of bad luck that was hitting
us. Yeah, it just, and we were up top, we were standing beside the toe, like, Taylor and Daryl, and we're like, is he open? It was like, nah, there's someone else there.
I'm like, is he offsides?
He's open. And then he shoots, and we're like, holy, what the fuck? And I was like, literally in a shock of words, because like, we scored, and then people, at halftime, were asking me, like, yo, how do you feel? Like, I'm like, I don't know what to say. Like, I don't have words to express this.
2-0, 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
Man, come on, 25 minutes this in, we're 2-0 Richmond? Up.
We usually don't score to the 60th minute.
Yeah.
I usually have a heart attack around 60, 65th, and then God's like, look, I'll give you a goal. Don't die. That's your time. You know. So, like, that happened. But I always had it in the back of my head, like, Toronto is known for having comebacks. I mean, they pulled up big comebacks against Ford, Greenville, Chattanooga, Lansing. You call it in League One, they done it. I remember, what was it, the North Texas game? They were down, 3-0 and came back 3-3?
Yeah.
Granted, it's at home. It's not on the road.
I seriously think you can't sleep on anybody in League One.
Nah, you can't. I mean, you can sleep on.
Maybe. Yeah.
Orlando don't care no more.
Yeah, they're like, struggling.
They're like, hey, we're waiting for the draft, folks.
It's just the academy.
Waiting for the draft.
This is the academy team.
Yeah, so then we had the goal in the 53rd minute. It came off of, I want to say it's a deflection, but it doesn't even look like a deflection.
No.
I asked the kicker after the game, and he said he just saw it late. Like, it just popped up my number. But you made a good point about how there was a TFC player besides Hughes. And then once he moves, it was just an open space.
There was a gap between Hughes and the wall.
Yeah.
That TFC2 player was holding And as soon as the player starts to run up to take the free kick, he moves out of the way. Now there's a gap, but Josh Hughes' position is blocking Akira's view of the ball. And that's just, it's unfortunate. Because, I mean, a goalie is never going to set up in a way where the wall is blocking his view.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw him setting up that wall. He was setting it up. He set it up perfectly. It was where he wanted it to be. And then that TFC 2 player comes and stands right next to the wall. Josh Hughes is covering him. And he just peels out. And before Josh Hughes can even move, the shot's taken. So now Josh Hughes is in the way. Is in the way. He's blocking Akira's view. And he hit that ball, though.
He did. I'm not going to lie. Like, as a defender, at that moment, you're not thinking, he's going to keep this on the ground.
Yeah.
Because a lot of players are taking free kicks. What they try to do? They try to line it up, put it in the top corner, put up some spin on it. They do all that fancy stuff. Where he just kept it simple. Like, just, he was like, I'm going to take this.
He
like
Megan Rapinoe'd that shot. That
yeah, just like, I'm going to keep it simple. I'm
putting
keep
it there.
And putting it there. And he did. And, I mean, Akira saw, like, I thought it took a deflection, but looking on replay, it didn't.
Yeah.
And then, like, up to that point, our friend Henry. By the way, if you don't follow Henry on Twitter, he is great.
Yeah.
He is awesome. He's a good friend of ours. He made a point about how Toronto was dominating the possession a lot, and it looked that way. It looked like Richmond was just like that fire because he had the possession. But then it was kind of like a weird paradigm shift. Like, Richmond kind of got on the ball. It was kind of pushing TFC back.
Yeah.
But it was in that way of, like, we're going to push you upfield and kind of, like, waste time and try to, like, control the clock.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Gallardo took a nick. Maxi was getting nicked up early and often. Like, I think Toronto had, like, what, 16 fouls or close to 20 fouls?
Yeah, they...
Like, they you could tell they were
fouls.
Getting...
They were getting frustrated.
They were fouls of frustration, but they also, like, youth. Like, yeah. They weren't even tactical fouls. They were just, like, I don't
panic
like
fouls.
You. Like, you took my ice cream cone. Like, that's the kind of foul it was. But, I mean, it looked like we're frustrated Toronto because we took Toronto out of their play of, like, trying to build through the middle and kind of now reverting them to do long balls. Then, like we said earlier, you know, had the substitutions happen. We went more narrow than I would have liked, and I feel like it went. And then we get the second goal off of another set piece. Yeah.
This one was, it was a tough pill to swallow because at first viewing, it looks like this player's offsides. And then you think to yourself, he's completely isolated. Who was marking him?
Oh, Muhammad? No, I ain't gonna lie. Muhammad is my favorite player from TFC 2. Like, he's gonna be playing for Toronto's first team next year, or probably the rest of this year. But my man's got up like he was in that slam dunk contest.
Yeah.
And I don't care what you say. At that moment, ain't nothing you can do but just look at me like,
wow.
But why are you so high? Like, why are you so high? Like, there's no reason why you should be this high.
But also, he timed his run perfectly.
Oh, he did.
He timed his run perfectly and was the closest. By the time the ball got there, he was the farthest up.
Yeah.
And it looked like he was offside.
And sometimes, like, I'm not trying to make excuses, but sometimes they're just set pieces you can't defend.
Yeah,
like, it's the same thing in NFL. Like, you
a
know
lot of
how
people,
it is.
They
like,
try and plan set pieces, plan what's going on in the box. It's a mosh pit in there.
Yeah.
It's literally a mosh pit, and if someone can get out, they get out.
It's the same thing in NFL. Like, where they're just a perfect pass, I don't care what kind of defense you're playing, you just can't stop it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what this set piece reminds me of.
This set piece was like a Hail Mary.
Yeah.
If
that ball,
every single receiver in the same area.
Yeah, if that ball goes any other space on his head, or if he doesn't make the right run, it goes over the crossbar or into Akira's hands. I mean, that's where I'm like, I'm kind of torn about this game because I'm like, it's like minute. Because I feel like Buelo executed, and this team executed everything they wanted to do.
Yeah.
Frustrate Toronto. Get some early goals. They did everything, like,
they did
everything
on the
board. It is just like, oh, it's like, it's right there. It's right there. So, we end four games out of 10. Now, just in that standpoint alone, it's not bad. Granted, I would say
10 points in four games.
Seven of those points are against two teams, but that's beside the point. They're still points. You got two big games left against Ford and South Georgia, who are what? South Georgia, I think, fourth in the table right now. Yeah. And then Ford is six. I want to say, I think Ford is six.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're a big game.
Ford, yeah, they're in six.
Yeah. Oh, South Georgia's third, my bad. But they're big games, you know? And the thing is, we still have a game in hand over Toronto. I mean, we would need... Honestly, I would say this, and this is just me. In order to make the playoffs, you have to win, I would say, 7 out of 9 and get draws in the other two. But, I don't know, it's just... Is it too much to ask for playoffs right now? Like,
at this point...
Let me rephrase this. Now, is it too much to ask for playoffs? Is it too much to say that the playoffs are in reach, or is it now just like, all right, finish the best you can? Because I still feel like this team can make playoffs. I still feel like this team can make playoffs, but you have to go on, like, a meteoric rise. Like, we have to pull off,
like a streak of wins.
No, we have to pull off the UConn basketball run. Remember, UConn won the national title, but it was like they won 6 games in 6 days of the biggest tournament, and then they won the national title. Like, we have to go on that kind of run. And I will say this. I like the mentality of the team after the game, because a month and a half ago, we had this draw. We're having birthday cake.
Yeah.
And now it's like we get a draw. The fans are like, they're not pissed, but they're like, oh,
it's frustrating. It is frustrating.
Players are frustrated. And you can tell in their faces. You can tell.
It looked like they lost the game.
Yeah,
It looked like they lost the game. And it's like, they need to remember, look, 10 points in four games. It's a draw. You're undefeated in four.
Yeah, It's tough.
Take it on the chin and let's go get forward. Let's go get forward, Madison.
Yeah. It's not like, you know, we had big defensive holes, big defensive gaps. You know, and also, let's not forget, now, Toronto did have that little pace around the 55th to, like, 58th minute where they were just trying everything. And Akira made two. If Akira don't get saved in a week for the two saves he had, someone in League One office got to fight me.
Someone in League One office need to get fired.
Someone got
to
fight me. I'm GP. Like, we gonna have to fight. Like, I'm gonna have to square up for my man Akira.
Because that moment, it was a shot from outside the box.
He saved it. And then to have the presence of mind, because I would have been tired. I would have been laying on the floor. Like, I ain't getting up.
I swear Akira got springs on the side of his arms, because he bounced back up so quick after that save.
He did.
To make the save off the rebound header. That was amazing. Like, you're watching it and you're like, how did he get back up so quick?
I still don't know. It's an amazing save that he did. Amazing save. Yeah, you know. Like I said, man, is the reason why this guy is in the top five of saves and clean sheets.
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason why.
Yeah. He's definitely done his thing. But another thing is, I mean, that defensive line, we saw it. Remember, we saw it that moment, Shinovsky with that as ice pullback. Like, it looked like the ball was about to get away, the pass was about to get away from him. And he just cut back and embarrassed that.
Oh, Shinovsky got skills on him.
Oh, Shinovsky. He did his thing.
Shinovsky got skills on him.
Ivan was impressive.
He was. I told Ivan this, like, I would say, out of this winning streak that we've been on, He's been the most impressive player.
He has.
He's been the most impressive.
I think he works best in a back three.
Yeah.
He's not good in a back two. He's okay as a fullback, but in a back three, he knows what to do.
Because I think he does the best of both. He can do the best of both jobs. He can play that auxiliary fullback in a back three, but then when the wing back comes back, he can then slot to be that center back.
And support Shinovsky and Akwe.
Yeah.
And, of course, I mean Akwe.
And I'm not going to lie. Like, seeing Ivan drive up on that left-hand side, he can create. And I was
he can. Oh, I was like, who is this? He had moments. He had good moments.
Well, I've been out here thinking he Danny Alves. One night. I'm like, oh, yeah. Going to pull up.
He definitely did a good job. Troyer was, of course, just all over the place, making a nuisance of himself to the other team. It's midfield, as usual. It was great play from all the players. They all did their job.
Yeah,
they all did their job. That Daniel Jackson almost got what, assist of the year with that. The hold up play and the back heel flick out of the air. If that had dropped on Boateng,
there was no one that was going to stop him.
No, because Boateng was already going full speed.
Yeah,
but if the defender wasn't there to intercept that. If that drops on Charles Boateng's foot and it goes in, that's assist of the season.
I don't even think Jackson even took a glance back. I think he really was just like, "Oh, this ball's coming."
He just held it up, brought the ball down. It's still bouncing, and just flicked it behind him. That was a moment of brilliance.
Oh yeah. So I will say this, man: the creativity in the squad has gotten a lot better.
A lot better.
From what we've seen,
they're playing more relaxed. They're playing more comfortably. They're having more fun with their game.
I think they've taken on my moniker of being the upset kings. We'll see.
Let's do it this upcoming week. Let's do it.
Against Ford Madison. We're not going to talk super in depth about the Ford Madison game, and of course we have a great interview with Chris of BGN Ridden. So that's coming right after this podcast. After this and a commercial break. I don't know why I confused it. But round two, the Henny Derby, for those who don't know, River City 93, the Featherstone Flamingos. We had a cool nickname for this derby, for this game. It's called the Henny Derby. The winner gets a bottle of Hennessy. The loser has to watch the winner drink the bottle of Hennessy.
No, has to buy the bottle of Hennessy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So. And Hennessy's not cheap.
No, it's not.
Good Hennessy.
Yeah, it's got to be the right Hennessy.
Question. Have you ever had an Incredible Hulk?
No.
Really?
No.
Him not again, Henny?
No.
I'll let me bring you over to the dark side. Round two, I think, is going to be a very interesting game because.
It will.
Not going to lie to you, like, Richmond playoff chances right now are slim.
Very slim.
They're very slim.
So, and that's but, not.
And Ford has to win this game to stay in playoff contention. Exactly. We have to win this game.
They do.
Not saying if they lose it, they're out.
But it's making it hard. It's making it a lot harder.
And I hate to say it, we got lucky in game one. Because if I can't remember who shot, get knocked off the crossbar, if that goes in, the free kick, we got lucky. Granted, we had opportunities too, but we can't deny it.
Yeah.
Round two, I think Buelow will implement the same. I think the 3-5-2 is working. I wouldn't say get rid of it. It's working.
Basically, Buelow. A 3-4-1-2.
So is that math? Is that
yeah? So it's three.
I don't know math. Math is my weak subject. I say those on every podcast.
Yeah, 3-4-1-2 with Troyer and Maxi playing holding.
Yeah.
And Matt Bulldog playing right behind Gallardo and DJ.
Yeah. So I think that if you do that lineup still, I think what Ford will try to do is they are great on the fast break.
Yeah.
You know who they remind me of? The Phoenix Suns. Back in like the early 2000s with like Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire.
Yeah.
And how they were just like funny. They were just funny gun. They would just go.
Yeah.
But I think the thing is, I think if Richmond can do the same thing and just stifle them and kind of keep them out of the middle, put them out on the wings, and be like, look, you're going to have to create from the wings. You're not carrying anything in the middle and stifle them and frustrate them.
Yeah, then we've got a chance.
You got a chance. You got more than a good enough chance. I mean, we have to see. I think Matt was telling me Akwe is someone else is suspended for yellow card accumulation. I'm not 100% sure.
I don't think Akwe got a yellow card in this game.
I'm not sure.
Oh, Akwe did get a yellow card.
Yeah, so I don't know. So we'll see if that changes and does. Do you bring Troyer now down to center back, or do you put him as the middle center back and then put Shinovsky and Ivan on to the sides? We have to wait and see. So once we know the information, we'll tweet it out there to you guys, so you guys can know and everything. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting game. Because after this game, we come back. We go down south to South Georgia, and that's going to be
Yeah,
that's going to be interesting. Because South Georgia is kind of like, you talk about a team that's fell off a cliff?
I don't know what's happened with them.
They have fallen off. I think they drew this previous weekend with Tucson.
Yeah.
But still, their run of form
has been. They haven't won a game since they beat Orlando City B 4-1. When was that? That was ages ago.
Yeah. So
a few weeks ago.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll keep it funky.
That was in July.
News. So during the podcast, if you hear me take a break, you showed me some interesting news. So Barcelona get Neymar on a loan?
They're going to put out an offer to get Neymar on loan. That's weird.
I mean, I understand it because financial fair play and, but still,
I didn't think they wanted him.
I mean, you just put Coutinho out on loan to Bayern. He went this morning.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but the thing is, where does he fit?
On the left, where he used to play.
Yeah, but you got Griezmann. And you're not going to bench Griezmann. Unless you put Griezmann at attacking mid.
Griezmann may have to play up top because Suarez.
Suarez is hurt.
Suarez is hurt.
Yeah, I just remember.
So you play Griezmann up top, you have.
But then, so.
Instead of MSN, it's MGN.
Sound like a club. All right. That's hilarious. But I think that's all for us this week. Anything else, my good man?
No. Just waiting for the next game. And we got to take it. Look, last time we beat Ford, it was in their own fortress.
It would be. It'd be nice
to get another. We can do it again. If we did it once, we can do it again.
Be nice to get another dub.
Oh, it would.
Be nice to get another bottle of Hennessy. Two bottles of Hennessy.
It would be nice to get another win at Forward Madison. Because that's just sweet. When you're playing, for example, getting a win at Toronto FC2 is like they got five people watching. But if you get a win at Forward Madison or Lansing, these places where the crowd is bumping.
Yeah.
It feels so much sweeter.
Oh yeah.
It feels so much sweeter.
It's a different feel.
It's a different feeling.
You feel better.
It feels great when you know you silenced.
Poke your chest out.
You silenced the mob.
we won. Before
that goal celebration, the goal right. celebration.
Oh yeah. Hey, y'all think about that life. I don't care what y'all say. Real quick before we close out, Bulo's hair, I don't care what no one says, is the best hair in U.S. soccer.
Yes.
I told Bulo after the game, the moment you braid it, let me know. Just let me know. Because first of all, I really want to know, does Bulo go to bed with a hair wrap? Because the shape of the fro is perfect. I need to know, does he go to hair with a hair wrap, Because I feel like Bulo low-key, braids it up during the week, but there's no pictures of it. Friday, he unbraids it.
Unbraids it in his knife.
Yeah.
Ooh. Do we need to bring him in for another interview?
Nah, because it would be too black.
Because
I feel like we would start talking about, grids. No, we probably should.
We should. We've had, he's one of the people. We haven't had him on.
Well, we had it, the little
Lions Bridge. That was a feature. I'm talking about a full interview with.
I think we will get Bulo soon. We got to get Coach B on here, man. But that fro.
Nice.
Best hair in the league.
Nice.
By far.
Yes.
I don't care what other coaches' hair look like. They all look the same. That little swoop to the side, in sync haircut. I don't really care. Bulo got a fro. I just need Bulo for one game. I just need to see the Afro pig. I know Bulo got a pig somewhere in his office. I know he does. Because, am I lying? Because, every guy that has a fro.
You got to have a pig.
You got to pig it.
Yeah.
You're not using no comb.
No.
you pick it to make sure that it's, you know,
just
popping
the nice density, and good. You know, got to oil it, got to style it. I saw the Pickabula with the frog, like, oh, that's my coat. Now, the funny thing was, my wife was like, he looked like Megamind. And for like a good 10 minutes, I was like, oh, snap, he really does look like Megamind with this fro.
But no, the fro was on point. It was on point.
Yeah, it is. Definitely. It is. All right, we're rambling right now. We're going to wrap up. After this commercial break, I have a good interview with Chris of BG and Brandon, so make sure you check that out. And we'll leave his socials down in the link below. Real quick, we just want to say thank you guys so much for just listening to us. We recently just hit 2,000 listeners for the podcast.
Wow.
It's been big. This is our first year. So we've been talking about some things. We're working on some things to be bigger and better for year two. Just want to say thank you again to all the fans. And with that being said, guys, keep us on the good side. Hey, guys, I have a question. Did you ever have a shirt that doesn't fit quite right or just not stylish enough anymore? Well, I can solve that problem for you. Go check out AtomicLotusApparel.com to find an awesome design for t-shirts at a great price. Also, while you're on the site, go check out the new River City 93 t-shirt and tell us what you think about it. Hey guys, what's going on? This is Elliot. Right quick, before we go into the interview with Chris Walker, where we talk about Fort Madison, the culture up there. We also talk a little bit about the Red Army, the culture here in the city. There's a certain moment in the podcast where it sounds like the phone drops, the phone call drops, and it just happened unexpectedly, you know, how technology works. So I tried to edit it as best as I could. I wasn't able to clear it up totally all the way, but hopefully it works out the best. But yeah, I promise this is the last interruption as well. So sit back. Enjoy the interview with Chris Walker. His socials are in the show notes down below, so make sure you give him a like and a follow. And remember to like, review, and subscribe for us. All right? Talk to you guys later. Bye. What's going on, guys? Joining me on the phone today is Mr. Chris Walker. I want you to know I was about to call you Christopher Wallace so quickly. I was about to mess that up. But no. You're right. We got Chris Walker on the phone with us from BG and Redden. Just introduce yourself, man.
Yeah, man. So thanks for having me on the show for sure. Definitely stoked about it. You know, what I wanted to do with you, and that's the biggest thing, is just collaborate, you know, and we're kind of on that tip before all the supporter content posts that we're seeing online, right, about supporter-generated content, promote it, and that's what USL's big thing is. But we're already on that tip, and so here I am on your show. What I really wanted to say is, like, thanks for having me on here. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. So I'm writing for BG and Written. I'm writing under the column called The Break Curve, and that's a column on Forward Madison. And I came into writing for Forward Madison as I was already kind of following them a little bit, and I liked the sort of story they had. It's very similar to another beat that I write for, in a sense that it just was profound and provocative enough. I mean, the USL League One had already kind of been established with the teams it had, and then, of course, it got some expansion this year. So I came into writing for Forward Madison, I'd say almost about, I came into this maybe about 4 weeks ago. I've been following them since early May, and there was another gal that was writing was writing on Forward Madison for BG and Written, mm-hmm. that I just barely discovered the other day.
Okay.
So yeah, but she's not anymore because she's just covering Minnesota United, but as it may, those teams are connected, so I'm sure at some point I could imagine her and I doing a collab.
Oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure. I think they played, what, one friendly game against each other?
They did a friendly earlier this year, so, you know, which was like, it was like a 2-1 match. I mean, it's kind of hard to say. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, would that have been like an actual match? You know, what would that really have looked like? But, you know, it's polarizing. You know, these friendly matches, it's like, are you trying to win or what's going on?
It's always the weird thing. We always play the parent club. It's always that weird thing. Like, all right, we're not trying to get players injured, but we have to play. So let me ask you this. Like, you say you write for Ford Madison. Have you made it up to a game yet? Or is it kind of like you're just watching it do, like, how most of us are watching away games do ESPN Plus?
Yeah, you know, I'm watching it through ESPN Plus. I have been actually doing – let me just drop this other thing. So I run my own thing under Seek and Strike Collective and write on New Mexico United. And so with that situation, I travel a lot to away matches for that. And so when I started writing on the Forward Madison beat, you know, I pretty much just maxed out my away travel situation for 2019.
Yeah.
So I'm watching on ESPN Plus, like the greater part of us, but I'm trying to consume it on a different level. That's why it's important for me to reach out to people like you or Nathan Reynolds and essentially do Q&A collaborations or podcast collaborations and generate content and get other conversation out of the mix.
Okay.
I'll tell you this, Forward Madison, since I jumped on the beat, they have been very accommodating. I have already had two player Q&As.
Oh, wow.
I have full access to the media to be able to access photos and coaches' quotes and submit questions for their press conferences. And they mailed me a credential. So,
wow. Not gonna lie, that's kind of impressive. You know, you not even have been there and they're kind of treating you as if, like, you know, you come to every home game. That's kind of sweet.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, it definitely kind of took care of that sort of vantage point. Next year I will be planning to make it out to a few of the matches, too, so, at Breeze Stevens.
Okay. So, I'm pretty sure we kind of talked about it, but I just wanted to make sure that, you know, we talk about it now. At what part of the season did you start covering forward? Like, was it a beginning part or was it kind of like mid-season?
What part did I start covering them?
Yeah.
Let me see here. If I could look at this. Let me look at the schedule. I could tell you exactly where I dropped in on that. I mean, it's just a good point of reference. I dropped in on them. I think it was Orlando City B.
Okay.
That's when I started writing officially.
Okay. So right around that period, I think they might have been going through like a little rough patch. So if you can, like, how was the mentality of the team during that time period? Like, this is a brand new team, like, they're going through a rough patch. How was it? Was it kind of on deck, or?
Yeah, you know, obviously earlier this season they were not hot, right? They lost a lot of matches. And this is prior to them getting in their loans from Memphis 901. They were kind of on this rough patch. I was looking at it. The first time they played Greenville in what was called, the Snow Dome or Snow Globe, whatever they called that.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't have Don Smart, and they didn't have Oliver White or Louis Bennett. So they didn't have those players in the match the first time around when they played to a draw. And so that's kind of pivotal. And then as well, there was a point when they started streaking, right? And that's this latest thing with Coach Daryl Shore being like, hey, we need to get a point from every match. And the first three matches, they got points. They won all three, which, you know, if they're trying to get just at least one, they got nine. And then, of course, they played Richmond, you know, where they could have had a fourth game in the win streak, but that new formation kind of gave them the fits, and that 3-5-2 is kind of nuts, man. Going into that match, I had reservations about that formation because I realized that, and I wrote about this in my last recap on the Richmond Kickers Forward Madison recap, is that that formation, he had been devoted to that 4-2-3-1 for the longest time, and he had played other teams that had it or that were running a 4-4-2, and and it wasn't giving him the result. I mean, he lost 7 out of 8 matches with that 4-2-3-1. And I assume that he changed personnel, that he tried, you know, and he being Coach David Bulow, that he tried different things over the weeks and just amounted to, let's just put 5 men in the middle of the formation and kind of create a great, you know what I mean?
I mean, that's kind of the thing that we saw, too. Like you said, it was like the 4-2-3-1. It just wasn't working. And then we kind of went to this 3-5-2. It was kind of pretty much just clogged the middle. And we slowly backed away from the possession-oriented style that we had to more of, like, bunker and counter. And I don't know how, but it's been working in our favor ever since we transitioned to it. So,
yeah, it's a crazy formation, man. I mean, it's... He has utmost confidence in 3 men in the back. Like 3, just 3 back there.
Yeah.
Where everyone likes to have the 4th man just to kind of seal the sides and work in the middle. But 3 men in the back, you got 5 in the middle. Where I really saw the 3-5-2 to be most effective against Ford Madison, who, as you know, has a lot of speed, and they serve... Essentially, they're just covering, they're covering terrain when they win the ball in the back or in the mid, is that with those 5 men, they couldn't really finesse the ball in such a way. They couldn't send numbers up the middle of the pitch with those 5 men there. They're automatically engaged. It was basically like a built-in high press. Mm. And most teams, you know, get out of shape, or they send so many numbers up that eventually there's just all kinds of breaks, you know, on the other side of the ball. So, but I didn't really see how the 3-5-2 complemented Richmond going on the attack. Then it just didn't seem to give me much. Like, Gallinardi kind of was the show. So I didn't really see how that works. I mean, how what has been your observation of the 3-5-2 in the last 3 matches on the attack?
From what I've seen, it's like I said, it's a lot more counter. So we use Lockerbie a lot out on the wings for pace. We also have either Hughes or Thompson, depending on the situation, busting out of wings. But then it allows players like Gallardo and Wape, and if it's Maxi, to kind of form like a triangle with Troyer holding the base in front of the back 3. And it kind of allows them to interwork, play with each other. And then you have a Chandler Jackson being the one to knock down the ball or being that last man to hang off the center backs. So I think it works great, because not only does it kind of ties everyone closer to the pitch, but then it allows players like Gallardo to then – he's not the sole isolated figure on the ball. You know, he's not the only person just standing in a number 10, but he could go from a number 10 to the winger, to the striker, kind of to midfield, and someone else can fill in those holes for him. And allows him more to be mobile in spots.
Right. He definitely has a lot of speed. I mean, I watched him take off against Ford Madison, and he shook a couple of dudes out of their shoes, and it was just like, wow, okay, like, this guy's got some speed. We need to definitely address that. What seems to be the thing, though, is that whenever Richmond was in either half, and I'm mainly thinking about when they're near the box, the 3-5-2 maybe doesn't seem so bad, because, you know, then you just have a bunch of numbers in the same area. So it's, you know, that shape doesn't seem to sustain as much. I mean, once Ford Madison was able to kick the ball into the corners of the pitch, you know, and they're able to find places where they could serve up a cross ball, then it Ford Madison ball again. And I do wonder in this next match if Coach Gerald Shore, if he develops a counter. Like, I kind of wonder if they come out in like a, and I said it in the recap, I said his own rendition of a flying V. I wonder if he came out with his own like 3-5-2 or 4-5-1 just to kind of counter the thing in the middle.
Yeah, it'd be an interesting matchup to see. I mean, definitely since, what, I think both teams are coming off of draws this past weekend.
Yeah.
So it will be interesting to see. I mean, Also, another question I want to ask you, since you are writing for Foreign, like, the fan culture up there is something that, you know, this team is known for on social media. Like, if you don't mind me asking, like, how did they even start off like this? Like, how did they become, like, this social media, I guess, firestorm that they are?
They're just, man, they're creative. I sat on one of their webinars, man, and they just really, from what I understand, I mean, they did study, like, other influencers on social media, and they were able to draw from that. But at some point, they just set their own precedent, and they had things that they do. I mean, that pink yard flamingo is such a big deal. And, you know, of course, they were taking all kinds of social media photos with that thing. I mean, recently you saw them do the, they had 10,000 on Twitter, and they had one sprayed gold, and that was like this trophy they created. And I'm pretty sure they did so many other things with those little pink flamingos. They're like $6 in their store. And so they just, it's just crazy, right? I mean, what have they got lately? They have this, or none, like they focus on their little pink flamingo, yard flamingo that they sell. They do so many things with that. They create this crazy promo, that really, if you have to buy tickets to the match to get it, like what was one of them was a signed watermelon by the whole team.
Yeah.
Along with like a can of White Claw. And, you know, I mean, that's kooky, but like, it's kind of cool. Bowling shirts when they played Richmond. And then lately it's this 90s windbreaker. And then they're still creating other things that possibly could happen, like possibly a gravy dish, or, you know, somehow a pink cheese head. I mean, because you guys are right there in Wisconsin, or they're right there in Wisconsin. You're not, I'm sorry. And so they're creating different promo, man. And other parts of the league, it's different, right? If you go to USL Championship, Phoenix Rising, they got Dollar Beer Night. And that's really not a theme. It's like a special that they do, but they've been doing it so often, and somehow the team is also winning. But I think the team is just in form, that being Phoenix Rising. And the beer just happens to just kind of be something that's putting people in the stands. If you go to New Mexico last night, they had 15,247 people in the stadium, and there was no promo whatsoever, other than, like, I think you can get a rally towel, but that was at the first 2,000 people. So it wasn't really like they need to do anything. They just, the people are generally very interested in soccer in New Mexico.
Wow. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, even though I tell everyone here in Richmond that I can't stand for it, Madison, you can't help but, like, be impressed about what they're doing up there. Like, you know, we all want U.S. soccer clubs to embrace the community that they're in, and Foreign has took it in to a whole different level.
Well, they're doing so many things behind the scenes, too, right? Because, I mean, they have, okay, and I don't know, we'll have to get into what your club is doing vice this question, but they've got different supporter groups underneath the flock, right? So they've got different ones, and one that, like, I've kind of seen is the Featherstone Flamingos, and essentially what it is it's like a all-inclusive supporters group underneath the flock that specifically aims at promoting and celebrating Black culture. So what they've done is they've, like, educated the club on Black culture, because they have players on the team that are obviously of Black descent, and they are, you know, kind of matching a demographic. They've engaged the community so that soccer is promoted in the Black community, because it's not typically, I mean, I'm an African-American man myself, so I would say that there's not, soccer isn't really promoted much in that community. It's football and basketball. And then they're also doing things like taking the club into the community. I mean, they did, like, Black Restaurant Week this last week, so essentially they went to different restaurants with players, you know, of mixed descent, if you will, and they just checked out the different spots, and they hung out, and, you know, and fans got to kind of be there as well and kind of engage the experience. So so I think that they're definitely doing things beyond the marketing. Their folks are getting involved. They're engaging cultures and creating these other opportunities. And I mean, like I said, they offered to pick me up in Chicago to take me to a match there, because flying directly into, I think, into Wisconsin, it's like a a 3-hour ride to that place. So they're, I mean, so they're definitely trying to make people feel like they're home, like right away. So what is Richmond like? Like, what is Richmond like, and what's going on with the club, the supporters group? like, give me an earful of that.
Well, all right. So you know, like, Richmond is the oldest club in U.S. soccer history. Our supporter group is called the River City Red Army, which I'm a part of. I've been a part of, I'll probably say, since 2014. And I will say it's, how can I put it? It's like a college football Saturday atmosphere, because we tailgate, we hang out. But it's like really like Southern culture. Like, you can walk into the supporters group and just start a random conversation with anyone. They'll probably talk to you, like, with no hesitation. We're not, I would say we're very unique from other supporters groups, because we don't do a lot of TIFOs, a lot of banners. I mean, we have the banners on the outside, but it's not like we make a lot of TIFOs like that. I probably say we make like 1 or 2 TIFOs a year. But I would say supporting wise, like 110%, like, the Red Army is behind the team. Like, I think even at the points of like last year where we were arguably the worst team in USL Championship last year before we got self-relegated, I would say Section O, where we sit at, was still packed. And people were still like, you guys are still going to the games? They're like, yeah. Like, we're still going to go. Like, we're not, just because the team is losing, we're not going to just turn it away. But I would say, like, the club and the supporters group are very open to what the people in the supporters group would like to do. So, like, me, for instance, I'm a teacher, and I led a drive this year about getting supplies for back to school. So, a lot of members in the River City Red Army bought, like, school supplies and whatnot to the past game. I put it on social media, and, like, my car is full of, like, school supplies. But it is things like that that we do. We also do, like, we have a match at the beginning of the year with the front office. And we play them. And we get to play at City Stadium against the front office. Like, I hate to say it, but David Buelow scored a goal against me. I still think he cheated to get the goal, but he scored against me because I was a goalkeeper. But it's fun. And it builds that level of, like, you know, hominess between y'all. You know, you get to know them. They get to know you. And I don't know. Like, it's just a real homey feel to it.
So you guys are in. You guys jumped in the USL 1 this year. Where were you at last year?
USL Championship.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. We were there for the past. We've been there for a while, but the last 2 years just hasn't been good for us. So we kind of, like, faded off into obscurity. And then when USL League 1 came around, we were the first team to go down, jump down into it, which, I mean, it was bound to happen. Like, club finances just wasn't. Like, we couldn't compete financially with, like, the likes of Louisville, Cincinnati. And we knew that. Like, the fans knew that. So, going out of League One, we was like, all right, it's probably a little bit more equal playing field for us. And, I mean, I want to say, if you take out the month of June, we haven't had a horrible year. Like, it's been a much better year than what the last 2 years have been combined.
I mean, you got to give it to your team, though, resilient. I mean, like I said, like, They had dropped 7 of 8, and then it was like a switch was flipped. And, yeah, I know this past weekend y'all hit a 2-2 draw. I mean, Forward Madison hit a nil-nil draw. So it's like you're still unbeaten, technically.
Yeah.
And with that formula. And,
yeah,
you know. So, I mean, like, it's still resilience.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I was telling, like, you know, I was thinking about and telling a couple of fans about, like, how if, you know, a month and a half ago, if we get this draw, we're all ecstatic, like, we're all happy. And now that we've won 3 in a row, we're pissed off because we got a draw. But I just mean, like, the mentality shift. But I would say, even in the midst of that, like, the support, and even the team, you know, last year we was going through that rut, it just seemed like the team just kind of just stopped caring. I hate to say that, but you could kind of just tell. It's kind of like when you're playing a sport, you're just losing. You're just like, yo, nothing's going right. Like, I'm just tired of trying. And it would have been very easy for these guys to do that. And even after we went to Lionsbridge and we played well there, and we were all like, all right, something could happen. And we didn't win the following week. it would have been very easy for this team to go into a funk, shut it down. But they didn't, and I tipped my hat off to them. So I tipped my hat off to them for that.
No, that's cool. So let me ask you this. Okay, so let's talk something fun. So let's talk the kits, right? Like, does Richmond, have they produced many kits as far as fan merchandising is concerned? Like, have you guys been able to buy different looks over the years, or has it just been like the team that just does the basic kind of two color thing?
All right, so I would say this. Our kit designs could be a lot better. They could be a lot better. But I would say they have allowed the pregame jerseys that they have out there are like dope. Like, we had a real dope one for Pride Night, Military Night, there was a dope one. And we're having Culture Night September 14th. It's pretty much, I can't give too much away, but the jersey for it looks very dope. Sure, like, sure. I saw like the outline for them. I can't wait for that jersey to come out because I'm buying that.
Nice.
And they have a lot of throwback jerseys they've been giving away to fans and like allowing fans to buy. One thing I would love to see the Kickers do is either, I would love to see the Kickers go back to the green and blue look that's like throwback way back in the 90s. Or I would love to see us have like a black and red kit. I think we had it back in 2017. It was a black and red kit. It's kind of hard to wear black in the South. Because, you know, you'll burn up like a crisp. But it was just like, it was such a dope jersey design that they had that I would love to see us go back to.
Yeah, no, that's cool, man. I'm from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, so I get the South references all day long. It can be humid, but you know, and what I've seen for Forward Madison, I mean, they have so many kits. Like, you know, I like to rock a 3X, so those things are gone quickly, and it is just like I have not been able to get my hands on one, but they had this one that just recently came out. It was like this pink goalkeeper's kit. It was an alternate, and it was all pink. Like, I mean, talking strawberry milkshake pink, and it had these little black flamingos on it, like in a polka dot kind of fashion.
Yeah.
And so the keeper, you know, Dylan St. Clair, on loan from Minnesota, he was wearing this. It had pink shorts. It was fresh, and I really wanted this thing, but of course it had been teased earlier in the season, and they kind of made it happen, and it was like pre-order, but the pre-order could sell out, and it did, and I didn't get it, and it was rough, man. It was rough. And then they had this other one. It was a pink alternate players kit that they came out with like kind of like wavy flamingo feathering kind of deal to it, and it's been fresh too. And of course, you know, every time they've re-upped the design, but the 3Xs are gone. Like, it leads me to think that folks in Wisconsin are not, like, they probably don't have a lot of people that rock, like, plus sizes. So when they order, they must just order, like, the 2-3Xs all the time. And then they got all the smalls, mediums, and larges.
Oh, don't worry. Days. It's the same thing for me in Richmond. Like, trust me. I'd be like, hey, do you guys have any big guy sizes before I buy this? And they'd be like, oh, no, we have to order them. Trust me. It's the same thing happening
to
me.
And I'm like, yeah, right. And so I'm just like, man, like I'd like to be able to enjoy you more than just a scarf or a koozie. You know what I mean? Like, I'd like to be able to actually rock a kit too. But they got some good ones. I mean, they definitely got a lot for a first year program, and that's really cool because they got this white one, they got this blue and white one, this black and gold one. They got that pink one, and then it's crazy, man. I'm just like, okay, like, this club's probably going to be one that's going to put out many. You know, out in New Mexico, they don't have it like that. It's like just white and black, so there's just two kits. And then they did this third one for a sponsor they had called Meow Wolf, and it was like this kind of cosmic, spacey looking, total like, you know, like Stranger Things kind of vibe is what Meow Wolf is like. But they created it, and it was for a night, one night only. But, like, they made the kit. We all bought it, and it was chill. But they're not, you know, they're not really one of those. They're not a club where they're trying to do too much in the first year. And I've noticed the trend. I mean, I don't know what you've noticed, you know, some of the other expansions, but they either on the front end of it, like Forward Madison creating all the stuff, or they're just going to create the real basic stuff, kind of take it safe, not really, you know, waste some money in areas that they're not really sure about. And, you know, and then maybe the fans' pockets kind of suffer a little bit, because I go into our store here in New Mexico and I've already bought everything. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
if I take a cruise into the store, I'm probably just buying stuff just to buy stuff. You know, when you go to the store and you just buy stuff just to buy stuff?
I do. Sometimes I do. I mean, because a lot of the stuff I already got. Whatever so.
The store is, you know?
Yeah. So let me ask you this real quick about Ford.
Okay.
Even though they're in League One, I'm pretty sure this is kind of like a two-part question. Is there any player on the team right now that you can see at the season's end, like getting like a big move to maybe like USL Championship or to like maybe even MLS? And what are Ford's like ambitions? Like, do they want to stick in USL League One for a couple of years, or is this team trying to like move up the ladder like as quick as they can?
Okay, so let me answer this. So I think looking at the roster, in my opinion, like, I think the ones that you're looking at that can make jumps are going to be the Don Smarts. Paulo Jr., that's another one, too. And I don't have the roster up in front of me. I want to tell you, like, who obviously is the lone players, because, you know, but I mean, the thing about the lone players, if you think about it, is like, there's not necessarily a guarantee of what's going to happen with them after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you look at someone like Oliver White, and he's on loan from Memphis 901. So he's from Championship down to USL League One. They loaned him out through the rest of the season, right? And so, but what's great about that is Memphis isn't tied into any pro team, is that Fort Madison is kind of affiliated with Minnesota United. So if he does so well, there's that opportunity to get that Minnesota United kind of touch on it. Like, so I got the roster up right now. So Carter Manley is on loan from Minnesota United. Mason Toy is on loan from Minnesota United. Ali Ngonzi is on loan from Minnesota United. Wyatt Omsberg, all known from Minnesota United, and then Dane St. Clair, the goalkeeper, is all known from Minnesota United. So that's those. And then over here you got Oliver White, Lewis Bennett, and from Minnesota or from Memphis 901. And then you've got Josiel Nunez, who's from Universitario. So here are the players that I think that could do things. I think that you got Eric Leonard. Like, he's just a straightforward Madison player, but he's like a beast when it comes to like back line. Don Smart out of Jamaica. You know, the guy's a sound player. Guy's got like a killer cross. He's got good speed. You got Paulo Jr., who's out of Brazil. Also another solid player. I'd honestly think that they're going to get offers, and I don't think that they'll be in that spot. J.C. Banks is looking good for them, and Christian Diaz. Like, they got some solid, like, starting 11-type players that are not on loans. You know what I'm saying? And then, so that's who I think. And then, as far as their ambitions, I don't think that they're trying to move up super quickly. I have not asked this question, so I will definitely be interested to ask this question to get kind of a idea of what their thing is. But just looking at first year clubs like this, I would think that they want to have like a good winning history for at least 3 to 5 years, and then be looking for like the next curve upwards, at least championship. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. I think that they can make a run, but, you know, they did get quite a bit of help from championship and MLS on these lone players. Mm. I mean, if you take those players away, you know what I mean? Yeah. Then the roster is vastly different.
So does Fora have like a youth academy set up or anything like that, or are there talks about it?
I don't think they have one right now. I think that they have been talking about it. I know that they have done some cool things over the past few weeks where they're like signing youth players for like a day just to kind of combat like maybe what was it? They signed this kid to a contract for a day, and then when you read the backstory more about it, there was a player on the team that was homeless, and I can't think of his name off the bat. He was homeless and living in his car, and then, you know, he tried out for the squad, he made it, and he was no longer homeless. And so they kind of are doing similar things like that in the community, really, to kind of just impress upon the kids that there's opportunity, and it doesn't matter where they come from or what their story or their family story is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they've been doing kind of like community type things like that. I kind of searched a little bit onto their sites, and I don't really see any mention of academy just yet with what they're doing. But I don't doubt that they're not involved in the community with the kids as well, you know?
Oh, okay. I mean, that story alone sounds impressive for them just to, you know, help a kid out to not be homeless anymore. It sounds very impressive.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, and so your guys' mascot is, so you guys are the Richmond Kickers.
Mm-hmm.
So is this a kangaroo?
Oh, yeah. It's Kickaroo.
Oh, it's Kickaroo. Okay, yeah, okay. Man.
It's Kickaroo.
Yeah. I wondered. I was like, I see this. I wasn't sure. I was like, I see this thing. It's like a K. But I was like, what are these, like, are, you know, these little, like, points on the shield? I'm like, what are these things? Are these, like, the little markers you drop when you're somewhere on your iPhone? You know what I'm saying? Like,
it's not that. Really? I would kind of say it kind of plays into the tagline of the club, was it joyful, athletic, united. So it's kind of like the 3 points of what the club is based off of. So that's why I kind of like think the 3 points are meaning. But yeah, the mascot is Kickaroo. So that's our famous mascot and whatnot. If you ever watch like a home game, and you, it's kind of like at the beginning part of the game, wherever the opposing team warms up at, Kickaroo will stand there with like his arms open and be like, give me a hug. Give me a hug. Like, kind of like, you know, just joking around. But I got to say, like, it's one of the best mascots. I'm surprised more teams in USL League One doesn't have a mascot. As much as the team is on social media, I have not seen a mascot yet. And I'm very surprised by it.
It's just those pink yard flamingos, man. Like, that's it. That's all it is. It's quite interesting, you know, that they have adopted that. That there it is. That's the mascot. You know?
I mean, you got like players from all. You got players over in Europe talking about it. I think I even saw like a U.S. senator talking about going full Mingo or something like that. But it's like they have become like the crown jewel of U.S. soccer culture. Like, you have big name writers like what, Adam Sneaves, Paul Tenorio, Jimmy Conrad, Copa 90 talking about the guys. So I mean, it's impressive.
You know what they're like, though, right? Like, Forward Madison is totally the Cool Runnings of USL.
They are.
They've got a Jamaican bobsled team. Like it's just, they are that fresh, flavorful, man. Like, in their kits, it's flavor. And they just got a good squad. And that's what it is. Like, that's where they're coming into this mix, is they're just that independent, like, funk, you know, that hype machine, and they're owning it, you know, and I wonder what else you'll have like that. I mean, I think in the ISA, you have that Oakland Roots team, right, like, somewhere, so, like, they got that, but I don't think there's really anything else out there.
Oh, I can't wait for like that. I can't wait for I said it on Twitter. I can't wait for NISA to fold so Oakland Roots can come into USL League One, so I have a reason to go out to Oakland just to go watch them. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's, well, because they got USL East Bay, right? And that's, I don't know what they're going to be called. I thought that was Oakland Roots, but it's not. And then USL San Diego, the championship, so, I mean.
That'll be interesting. So, oh, going to finish, my bad.
No, I was just going to say, so they're doing it for sure. I mean, you know, where they're putting all these squads.
Yeah. So before we wrap up real quick, like you mentioned a couple of times before, you are a New Mexico United fan. So just real quick, like how dope was that U.S. Open Cup run?
Okay, so that run was dope, man. Like, because, okay, let me expose myself slightly. So when Open Cup first came around, because, you know, all this is brand new. Like, we're USL Championship. Like, there's all this stuff going on. We're playing friendlies.
Yeah.
And so Open Cup comes up, and it's just, they just show you those initial 2 days. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's it. You know what I mean? Or that's all we're going to play. And so we played that first match against Phoenix Rising, and they're already someone we play in our season. So it's, you know, that thing went the full 90 and then 120 and then into PKs. And then into PKs, the lights went off in the damn stadium, and it was like, all right, cool, Phoenix Rising on PKs. Then it's like, boom, Colorado Springs Switchbacks, play them. And we already had to play them 2 weeks later, a week later for regular conference play. So we play them, beat them, then go back up there, play them again, and then get Rapids. So you're going to Colorado a third time. I think we own the Colorado State Championship pretty much this year because we beat, like, all the teams in Colorado. So that run was sick, man, because of the fact that it wasn't just going to be those two. They actually went for it. I just sat in a coffee with Coach Troy Lassane. It's, like, our head coach and our technical director, and he did kind of a Q&A this past Friday for folks, for season ticket holders, and he was saying when he applied for this position, you know, he wanted to get to the round of 16. He said that was very important to be able to make a statement for a first-year club, and, I mean, they got to the round of 8. So, like, ultimately, you know, they made a statement. It was important for him, for this club, to do that because it says, like, hey, this is a stand-up club. You know, it was important for them to get those MLS teams, and regardless of, like, how people are like, oh well, Rapids didn't, they only had 30% of their roster in, or oh, FC Dallas only had this percentage of their roster in, like, they still embody the club, like, they, it's still the club, and the coach totally let us know that, you know, that's still FC Dallas and that's still the Rapids, and they still booked that beat. And if they want to contest the wins because they didn't have their first team in, then that's on them, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously Minnesota United had their first team in. You know, they had like 80% of it in, and it was like, it was a difference maker on that match. And, I mean, look at Minnesota United now. Like, I mean, going against the ATL, and I'm pulling for Minnesota, personally. Nah. And
I mean, you have no other choice. You cover forward, so you kind of got to root for Minnesota.
Well, you know, it's that, and then it's also that, like, my co-host on our Seek and Strike podcast that we do on Monday nights, he's like, all of a sudden, he's back to his ATL roots. Like, he's been super quiet about all his Atlanta teams, and then all of a sudden, he's like, and Atlanta United's in the Champions, you know, the Champions Cup, and he's, like, talking about the Open Cup, and I'm like, hold up, where were you for all of the other part of the Open Cup? You were not really toting Atlanta, and so now he is. So I'm like, nah, dude, like all things, I must counter the ATL. I'm a Bama fan, so, you know, I just can't see the GA come up on any area. no way. So the run's been sick, man. It's been cool, and here's the only sad part about it is that I became one of those, man, okay, if they win this next one, I'm going to go. And I never got to go to any of the Open Cup matches because I was always waiting for the next one. And the one that I really wanted was I wanted them to beat Minnesota and I wanted LAFC to beat Portland because my family's in California. And I was like, I want to go to the United LAFC match. Like, we can lose that all day, but I wanted to at least see that happen. And as it may, like, neither team won, so it wasn't like that combination ever existed anyways.
Yeah, that would have been a real dope cup, man. But with all that being said, man, I thank you so much for coming on the show, man. It's been a great talk with you, man. It went a lot longer than what I expected it to be, but it's been great.
Hey, you know what? Like, you kept it going, man. Like, I'm telling you. So if you got folks over there in Richmond that are shy around you, then, like, there's something really going on. Because you kept it going, man. You had a good conversation going.
Thank you, man. Well, hey, I know like, 3 o'clock over there in New Mexico?
No, it's 6 o'clock right now.
Oh, okay.
You're 2 hours ahead.
Okay. That's good to know. Because I swear, like, I thought New Mexico was, like, way further behind us. But, man, you going to enjoy the
Mexico? You think we're, like, in another country or something.
It feels like it sometimes, yo. But, man, you going and enjoy the rest of your day, man. I thank you so much for coming on, man.